welcome everybody to this next keynote presentation on security at work, driving Microsoft's digital transformation with security at the core. I'm really delighted to be welcoming Brett Arsenault, who's a CISO of Microsoft, to make this presentation. As CVP and CISO at Microsoft, Brett is responsible for information security and risk management and directing the company's incident response strategy. He's a seasoned executive with 25 plus years of security experience in multiple technology disciplines. So I think he's going to give you a really insightful and interesting presentation today. So without further ado, I'll invite Brett up to the stage. Thank you.
Are you really press? Are you three from the press? Okay, so I have to be nice. Okay, excellent. How's everybody doing? I just got in. It's a long flight. It's amazingly cool to let me come here, so thank you very much. I don't actually know everything we're going to want to talk about, and I understand you have an app to ask questions. So I'm going to go against protocol because this is a small enough room, and I'm going to say, you can listen to some slides or what I have to say or some visuals I show you, or a few of you could proudly put your hand up and say, I have a question I really wanted to know when I was coming here. At least three of you will leave with an answer. Not an answer you'll like, necessarily, but at least an answer. Should we start with that approach instead? Just for fun. Who's got a question they really wanted to know when they came to this session? Anybody? I'll pick you if you don't. There's a prize for the best question. Do you know how we pick the best question? My ability to answer it. So make it really, really easy. No questions. Yes, here we go. Scream it out. I'll yell it out for everybody.
Okay, as a CISO.
Yes. Oh, look, they have microphones. They're so mad at me right now for going out of band on this.
Okay, as a CISO,
yep.
With all the threats, with all the people who might want to have a go at your company, how do you manage to get to sleep at night?
Good question. I will make sure I answer that question. I like that. Okay, what else? Yeah.
What's the most difficult problem that you're
currently facing? Okay, so the mic's coming, but I'll just repeat it for you if that's okay. What's the most difficult problem that I face? I don't get any sleep, but then I have a good answer for that. Yeah.
Question. In the old days, we all worked together resolving security incidents. Mm-hmm. And when we found something bad, we told you, and you fixed it at Microsoft.
Yes.
In the meantime, we have bad actors like the US government that keep the things to themselves and don't tell you. How can we come together again as a community and help each other?
Okay. I like that question. I have one more, and then I'll start, and then we'll have the question at the end. So I have keep me at night. Go ahead over there. Thank you. Excuse me. What keeps me up at night? Hardest thing we have to solve, how do we work together, right? I don't think there's only one government that's bad, by the way.
So, GDPR, your problem or the
GDPR, it's so funny. I had two slides in the appendix to talk about how we're dealing with GDPR. If we have time, I'll walk through them. But when you say my problem is CISO or my problem as US or my problem is Microsoft? Yes. Okay, so the question was, is it my problem versus organizationally, where should GDPR lie? So let's use the power of group here really quickly. I'm going to do a poll. Oh, gosh, I forgot. Underneath two seats, I came in earlier. Underneath two seats is an envelope. If you could all just quickly check under your seat for the envelope. Thank you. You've all successfully been fished. So... there are no envelopes. Now, I just wanted to get some energy in the room, just having a little fun. So let's think about this for a second. I'm going to give three options to the question you just asked. It may be a variant. Just pick the best answer by raising your hand. You can put GDPR underneath the CISO. You can put it under legal counsel, or you can put it under the privacy officer. Sometimes they're the same. So show of hands, how many people in your organization it's underneath the CISO? Is the responsibility lies with the CISO? This will help you. Okay, how many of you, it lies within your legal department? Okay, how many of you, it lies within the privacy officer's role? What's that? How many of it's all three? Okay, and then last question, how many people have privacy in the legal department? Okay, does that answer your question? Does that get you? See, I told you, three people would leave with answers to the things they wanted to know. We've done one, I have to solve two. For us personally at Microsoft, GDPR sits within the privacy organization, which was in the legal organization within our legal group. I obviously have a critical role in making sure that we can meet the foundation to make sure we're meeting that goal, and I'm part of the V team that runs it, but the actual accountability for it will sit within privacy inside of legal. Okay, so this is a pretty simple conversation given recent activities that have happened, and a simple view from the Art of War, Sun Tzu, which is honor the past, be honest about the present, and have hope for the future. And so we're in this situation, nothing more telling in this situation than what happened in the last few weeks with the ransomware situation, which is we all have legacy. Some people's legacy is current, some people's legacy is protected, and some people it is not. And we have to honor the fact that we got there for the reasons why we did. I'm not casting dispersion, I'm not casting judgment. I have legacy as well in my environment. To be honest about the present, which is, as much as I love advanced threats and I love the teams that we do that track the most amazing nation state activities and all the other things that you'd expect, all the shiny object work, it's awesome. But we still have this fundamental issue, which is that we're not doing our hygiene well enough. The basics of hygiene that are the most effective are still not being done well enough. And so that's my daughter would tell you that would get me a gold medal in the Olympics of duh. In that it's the pedestrian part of my job. It's also one of the hardest parts of my job, is to make sure that that's actually happening. And then I have hope for the future because I have seen in the last few years, despite the information sharing thing, which I think is a reality, I have seen advances in technology and in cultural awareness and people awareness that actually give me hope that we will make much more progress in the next 5 years than we made in the last 15, right? In particular, to some things we're doing as a company, but more when I look around this showroom and the floors and I see the work that's happening and I see some of the innovations like what Cylance is doing and some of the other companies. And so I do have hope for the future because I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I didn't believe we had some hope for the future. I should probably clarify something super quickly. My job is like any CISO or security person in this room. I'm responsible for protecting the assets in the network of Microsoft. I don't sell anything. I don't use all Microsoft products to protect the environment. I use third-party and Microsoft products. So I'm just here sharing what we've learned from a process perspective and how we do what we're doing as one of the companies that has a fair number of adversaries pointed at it. And so this won't really be a product pitch, but I am going to talk about some things that I think are interesting in that space. Does that make sense? Okay. So this may be governance that you don't care about, but changing culture in a company or changing culture in a country or changing culture globally is a critical part for how we're going to fix this problem. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about an opening story. My communications person who didn't travel with me is awesome, puts this in to remind me. And then I'm going to explain a lot about what we happen with governance, because from us, I know in the US we run a single board of directors, not a dual board system that's usually run in Europe. And I'll give you an idea of what the board's asking and what we see boards asking that I advise, not just at Microsoft, and how we govern around that. And then I'll talk about some of the things in the technology space, okay? So the story's quite simple. Same ones you see. I come into work on a Saturday morning, and one of our execs sends me a note and says, hey, I think I may have made a mistake, which is never the way you want to start your morning on a Saturday. And it says, I got this piece of mail, and like, you weren't saving a Nigerian prince, were you? And I said, no, but, which is where I knew I was in trouble, but I did click on a link, and I think it may have been bad, and so I just need you guys to go back and take a look. And I said, that's awesome. Thanks for calling us. Tell me what you did, though. Well, did you open the mail? Yes. Did you click on the link? Yes. I said, did you put any data into the fields as we looked at it? No, and I immediately changed my password. So they did the right thing, and we were fine. And there's a couple of things that help us in that, but it really continues to drive this question for me on how do I make sure everybody knows what not to do and what to do, and how do I make sure the technology limits the number of choices that people have so they can click fearlessly. That's our model. Now, that's a great model for us to build, which is my end state goal is every user should be able to click on anything and know it's safe. The click fearlessly moniker you won't see from our marketing team. It's actually, how many of you like the term click fearlessly? See? Now, who doesn't like click fearlessly? Why? You don't believe it. Different reason. See, I don't like it because people already click fearlessly. And so I don't want to perpetuate you should just keep thinking everything's okay. So but that's essentially what makes up the day. So we spin up the SOC, we go through, we look at everything that's happening, we ensure that nothing's gone on, we monitor that account to make sure nothing's happening that's out of the usual. But that's one of 115,000 full-time employees and 185,000 identities on the system with our vendors. And so that's sort of the backdrop for how I think about this. So this is an interesting question that the person asked before. Let's be super clear about how I view my role. There's not, how many people are titled to CISO here? Oh, it's unfortunate. How many want to be a CISO? Ah, so you're smart. It's a very smart group. So one of the things we figured out in this thing is this is a beautiful view. This is, they don't have it in now. This is the person on the left is our CEO. They sleep really, really well, super, super comfortably. CFO, CMO, and then that's a CISO. They don't get to sleep at all. We don't ever get to go to bed. That's basically how we sleep. So when the question was, how do we sleep? That was it, but they lost my graphic from my titles underneath. I don't not sleep because of this job. It's just, as you can tell, I'm kind of a hyper person. I don't do coffee, and I'm from Seattle, but I'm still super excited. I love the job. I love the technical part of what we do. I love, though, the culture people change thing, which is the most impactful part of what we're doing. And so when we look at this, if that's the role, what's the conversation you have, and what conversation should boards have given what's going on? So I'm going to share with you some insights. I advise a lot of companies and boards on how to have this conversation. Obviously, we have this with our own board. I'll fly home tomorrow to prepare for my meeting with our board on Tuesday. And so let me just start with this lovely infographic that the data is beautiful. And you can tell me as you watch this what you think you're seeing. I'm sure you know. So this is from 2006. And we share this with the board. So what you're seeing is publicly disclosed data breaches. And what you're seeing is frequency is the number of circles you're seeing, and size of the disclosed records are the size of the circles. And so most boards are reacting to this piece of data, which is a completely reasonable thing to do. But the best thing about working with boards is a picture is worth 1,000 words, so we don't have to explain a lot. This is the fundamental thing that we're dealing with today. And so when I look at it, I'm sorry, I just want to go back to one thing real quick. Perfect. So when we talk about that, if that's the reality of the situation and be honest about the present, and we talk about the trends that are there, just the number of high-profile breaches obviously concerns them. The emerging wave of class action suits from consumers and shareholders is obviously a concern for boards. But probably most importantly is the thing on the right, right? Which is the increased regulation. I'm sure I'm about to get coined for a term that I'll get in trouble with, and my company will come back and talk to me about it. But I worry about some of the increased regulatory attention we see, whether it's GDPR, whether it's taxation issues or global issues. But what I worry more about it is this digital xenophobia that's happening, where we all believe all data has to live within a governmental boundary because we think we can somehow better protect it within our border than some other border. And so I don't believe there's true security benefit in any way, shape, or form. I do believe, though, there's great benefit for working and for keeping roles in country and keeping a large part of the economy in the country. But if it becomes to the point that it's so overtaxing, many countries won't be able to participate in this view because there's just no economical model where you can let every piece of data sit in every single country. And so I worry that we may go too far with it, and it'll be really interesting where we see how that's going to play out. If you give it as a simple example on the GDPR, since you brought the question up, I'll talk a little bit about it. In the United States, as an example, are people familiar with Sarbanes-Oxley, the SOX controls that you have to go do? They're fairly onerous in the things you have to go report on, but they're good. They're healthy. They ensure a certain level of authenticity, credibility with companies that I think is really good. But to give you an example, in my own environment, I would have up to 3 orders of magnitude more scrutiny on GDPR than I do on SOX. And so if you're in a financial institution, the pure economics of it don't work. So I like what GDPR is doing. We just need to quickly get to a reality set of views on what the controls are, what they really mean, and how we're going to adjudicate against those. Because today, this goes back to the question the gentleman asked. It's not just how we share information to protect ourselves. It's also how we don't create separate rules and regulations in every country that we all have to go meet because we can't economically be viable in a global marketplace if we do that. So that's my concern about digital xenophobia. But from a board perspective, they all want to make sure we're being complicit. And so there's a lot of work we'll do in that space. So this is a huge thing for what's going on with the boards that we have today, the boards that I work with internationally, not just in the United States. Here's a real common set of questions that we think boards should ask, not just mine, but boards we work with, right? Which is, and you should think about it whether you report to your board or not, which is, do any of these ring true with you? So I'm just going to walk you through a few of these, right? Does your organization have the right governance structure in place to prioritize risks? If any of you feel like you've covered every single risk you think you have, and you have zero risk in your environment, I would love to understand how you're doing that, right? Because it's basically a set of prioritized risks that you go work against. And so what does governance really mean for us and for other people? Governance really only solves two things. Who gets to make the decision, and who's going to be held accountable for the decision? And if you have clarity on the decision making and you have clarity on the accountability, you can drive a lot of great things. If you don't, it's very, very hard for a board to ensure you're taking and managing the right risks. Also, it's not here. It should also be part of a general risk program. It shouldn't be treated as its own separate item. I look at a cyber risk, just to be clear. I look at a cyber risk the same way I think about financial risk, legal risk, reputational risk. The same risk rating, the same score. If my red team does a pen test and finds something, it's on the exact same measurement that you would do for a legal or taxation risk from liability. So the company and the board can look at all risks in a consistent way. And that's super helpful for us. Number two, are we adequately monitoring the current and potential future cybersecurity legislation and regulations? I monitor about 350 regulations worldwide to see if they're changing or monitoring those. It's the pending future ones that are the hardest thing for us to see. Absolutely the hardest. And as I said, even on GDPR, we still don't have enough detail to really be, I mean, I know we'll meet the requirements, but I'm curious about whether I'll do it for the most operationally effective way as we go down that path. Can we contain damages and mobilize the first response? If we should have a cyber incident, I don't know how many of you do this. We all do, I'm assuming you all do tabletop and do real testing. At our company, our CEO and all of his directs do regular cyber exercises with us that are real world cyber exercises, including communications and all the other parts that go with it. I've learned it's not good for me to do those exercises right before my review, so I don't do that anymore. I've changed the tape. If you learn anything, do them at a different time cadence, because they never lead happy from that discussion, because there's always more things we should learn. But we learn a ton from those things. We had done one 18 months ago, and as part of the process, we realized we wanted to update our ransomware playbooks and model for how we deal with ransomware, which we got to take that playbook out and play it 3 weeks ago. And so it's one of those things where it's not just doing the exercise, it's coming up with a set of work that you can actually go run with and do something with that's material and impacts the change in the company. Number two, do we have cyber-focused mindset and cyber-conscious culture? And that's a really interesting one. So I own the education and awareness component in the company around security, risk management, business continuity. And one of the things we've become, I don't think I have one here, one of the things we've become super focused on. My wife is amazingly smart. Other than her taste in men, she's unbelievable. And she had this wonderful view about when to use my engineering pencil and when to use my crayons. And her point was, if you're trying to change culture and mindset, you need to use crayons and simplify. No one's going to understand the 100 different security programs you're doing. They're going to understand three or four things. So make sure you get people there and then bring them the rest of the way. And so we have these things that are called TSRs, threat summary reports. They're a one-page view, a simplified one-page view. In fact, I'm going to show you part of one. And in the bottom, it just says, here's what the incident was, here was what the response timeline was, here was what we learned, and here's what we're doing to fix it. But the important thing is I don't do it about our incidents alone. I look at three categories. I look at incidents that happened in the industry that had no impact on Microsoft. What did I learn from Sony? And I have a one-page. I can send the one-page to someone, and you can have it. It's the non-confidential version. I have another one. Another category, which is external to Microsoft, but it did impact me. So our healthcare service provider had a breach, which obviously impacts me because my employees are using that system and they connect to our system. So what are we doing and how are we learning and what are we doing from that? And then I have, obviously, if there's something that happened to us directly, obviously we'd have a threat summary report for that. But the two other ones that are super important to have, again, I'm just sharing what I've learned, is show me something that happened inside, but it wasn't an adversary. It was just, I don't think I can use this language here. Somebody who didn't do something really smart. It was a user error. Someone fat-fingered a router table, or someone fat-fingered on the firewall and ended up opening a set of ports. So they have impact. It was nothing bad. But those turn out to be the ones that have some of the most frequency in any organization you do. And while they don't get the press, operationally, they nickel and dime you to death. And so you need to track those as well and learn how you're going to do that so you can improve your operational efficiency and the accuracy of the hygiene in your environment. And then the sixth one, well, the fifth one's a terrible one. If you're the CISO and you're presenting to your board or some other board, and you have to ask this question, do you have the right talent and clear sets of accountability and responsibility? Basically, I check my badge when I walk out of the room. If my badge still works, then the answer was yes to that. If there's a question about my badge working, then I know it didn't. Then we've answered that question already. I do think the talent's really tough, though, because it's not about the leadership and all the talent within the organization. It's really in a space where you have negative unemployment in cybersecurity, and we're all competing for resources, me with you, you with me with government, government with me, all, and then good people and people who may be doing nefarious things, this ability to scale talent through more effective use of technologies, better processes, and frankly, outsourcing through managed security services is going to be super key. And so the ability, one of the biggest things I'm investing in is, how does my team really learn to do better contract management for managed providers? Because it's not about staff aug, it's not about people augmentation of my team, it's about functional delivery on capability, which is a very different way of thinking about how you have to, but it's the only way you can stay ahead in this space because of the complexity of what we're doing and the rapid change that continues to go on. But that's a super important question. And then how do you manage the effectiveness of your program? And so we think of effectiveness in programs in two ways. There's obviously control effectiveness, which most people have lots of different models for that. You can use ISO 27000, you can use SANS, you can use a number of them. But we also think there's maturity capability models, which we think are important. The NIST CSF or the the cybersecurity framework turns out to be a very good model that we're seeing internationally, about 60% of companies picking up for maturity. Remember, maturity is not the same as controls. You have to do both. Most boards, though, don't want to do a detailed control analysis. They just want to know where there's gaps and where you are doing it, how you're doing relative to maturity. Does that make sense? Just out of curiosity, how many of you use the NIST CSF, the National Center of Technology Cybersecurity Framework? How many of you use ISO? How many of you use COBIT? ITIL? Anything else I should be thinking about? No? Okay, we'll go from there. So that's sort of the perspective I think about from the board side of things. And not all boards are the same, not all companies are the same, but these tend to be the questions that you have to answer in response to those, along those questions. Oh, cool. They did put this in. So securing the enterprise. Remember I talked about the 0.5 leaded pencil and the coloring with crayons. We've had this interesting conversation about all the different pieces that we run and the different programs that we run. And honestly, I've come down to this simplified view. This is the stool. Can I use the stool? Thank you. I have permission to use the stool. Which is getting 100% of your vendors and your employees and your executive staff to understand a simple strategy is probably better than 50% of the group understanding the complex strategy. And so we came up with this simple stool, which is there's the three legs of the stool that are paramount, and they're very general and they're very almost pedantic around the fact that they're just hygiene. It's a pedestrian part of my job. But the only way to do data protection is to really make sure that we're doing that. And so I'm going to walk through a little bit of how we think about it, our promise, and how we think about that stool and the three legs on the stool. You'll be disappointed. You'll say you wasted your time because you already know this. So I will explain it to you. I will tell you how we use the Sanders culture. And then I'll talk about some of the things we use to actually make it real and work for us. Okay? Does that sound reasonable? So we've answered GDPR. We've answered what keeps me up at night because I don't sleep. We haven't answered your thing, what do I worry the most about? Yep, what the hardest problem that I have. And then I haven't answered how we're going to work together yet. So I still have two more to go in that section. Okay? But the hardest problem that I have is apathy. So I'll just answer that now. Apathy is the hardest problem I have. Apathy with employee base, apathy with vendors, apathy with suppliers, apathy globally, which is people who believe that everything that's happening bad is happening to somebody other than themselves. That is the number one issue that I face, which is how to get people to care. Because if there's this funny thing about knowledge and action, and it's kind of a funny thing. People say, well, you should do education awareness because if you make people aware, they'll do the right thing. That turns out not to be true. In particular, and I love Fish Me's here. I saw Fish Me downstairs. I love Fish Me. I think Fish Me's a great company. You just have to be careful because research will continue to show you, much like my little fishing trick at the middle, I wasn't saying anyone was stupid. But if you do test that people are guaranteed to fail, the amount of time that they remember the change and how much it changes behavior is really, really short. If you do it where you show people they are part of the solution and they care about it and they understand it and they don't feel like they just did something stupid, the attenuation is really long. So you have to be very careful when you use education awareness programs. It's not about how many people clicked on it. It's more about how many people didn't and what was the behavior of not clicking on it. And so this apathy thing and culture changes is honestly my biggest problem. And a little bit of, in my company, we love shiny objects. So working on amazingly cool, complex APT stuff is really, really fun, and I fully endorse it. My red teams love it. I just need to make sure we're doing the basics while we're doing the advanced threat stuff. So that's really the hardest thing for me to balance. The other thing is part of that hard thing to balance, though. When I say red teams, everyone familiar with what a red team does? So these are the teams that do attack and pen. They break all your stuff. They were the last category I didn't mention when I talked to my threat summary reports. So I talked about external no effect to Microsoft, external impact to Microsoft, internal, obviously, impact, internal inadvertent, and then non-actualized. That's all the red team work. Where, like, we theoretically show we can do something, and then we go make changes in how we respond to it, technologically, process, or otherwise. But red teams are funny. They create this sort of sinusoidal problem. They find a lot of things, we go fix a lot of things. They find a lot of things, we go fix a lot of things. And I remember a board saying to me once, why don't you take all these red team people and have them start becoming part of the blue team and fix everything? Now, if you've ever run a red team, it's an interesting scenario. From a high level, that makes a lot of sense from resource management, right? Because if they're just breaking things, they're just creating these really, really long lists. So I said, well, here's the deal. I do hold them accountable to their find to fix ratio. So if they find things that aren't fixed within the prescribed time, they're as accountable as a team that didn't fix it. They don't like that. But that's what we do. That helps change that. The other thing, though, is that's the problem with red teams and trying to make them fixers is they're like movie critics. Movie critics are awesome at tearing apart a movie, but they could never create a movie to save their life. And so their skill set is just not designed to build things. Their skill set is designed to break things. Super important. But so managing that piece and making sure that we don't have apathy in that case is super important for us. Okay. So in securing the enterprise, we have this commitment to trust around transparency, privacy, compliance, and security. And so you can go to our trust center and you'll get all these things. It's all interesting. I'll let someone else talk to that. Sorry, I'm not trying to play this down for our team. The thing that's important to me is these four principles that everyone in the company has to adhere to. Number one, protect customer data. Number two, ensure device integrity. Now, this is going to come back to the stool in just a second. Number three, protect the supply chain. And number four, protect our intellectual property. 10 years ago, this list wasn't that way, right? Intellectual property was the only asset we had other than people and a few buildings. We don't have a lot of assets in our company. We have a lot of intellectual property. When you start hosting consumer data and enterprise data at the scale we do now, it's clearly the number one priority. It has to be. So every decision in the tabletop exercise, it starts with this. Number one, is there a life safety issue? That's first priority. Second, is there customer data impacted? Second priority. Third is internal data. And that's the process we always run through. So whether you're building a service for Windows or for Dynamics or any other part, this is the same set we always go through. It turns out having these four core principles is super helpful for our executive team and how we think about this. All those other things are awesome, and they give you great transparency and ability and tools to go use them, and they're super important for you in a go-to-market. For me, internally protecting the company, these four are the most important things we have to go do. Why do I care about device integrity? It's out of curiosity. Why would that even be on there? We're not even a device company. I'm sorry. I have a Surface. We are a device company. But we had keyboards, we had mice, we had other, we had Xbox. Why do I care about device integrity so much? I always cared about software integrity. It's why we created the secure development lifecycle. No one? To access the cloud. Yes, partially, very true. Listen, the one dream I have, for those moments of sleep that I get, the dream that I have is we get rid of passwords. My goal is in 2 years inside the company, there'll be no passwords. In order to get passwords, you have to have something you trust. And today, the know something, we all know in username passwords not effective, right? Because it can be used and replayed from anywhere. So we build these multi-factor authentication systems, I don't have it on me, which either you're carrying a badge or a fob or a reader or some other stuff. And now we have companies, us included, who are doing wonderful things with biometrics, which is awesome. So you go from know something, have something, which incurs a lot of operational costs and bad user experience, or know something, be something, right? And now, of course, for disabilities, you have to account for all those things as well, whether you're doing fingerprint readers, iris, or facial recognition. But the goal is to get to that point, which is what we do like with Windows Hello. And so for me, I don't have to do the scales of justice where I have a great user experience and bad security, or great security and bad user experience. I have both. So my devices that use Windows Hello in the company, the average number of clicks for authentication and user experiences is 5 times less than it is for someone who doesn't. And they love it. They use their bio, they wrote their passwords, we can extend the password life because now that you're logging with something that's tied to the device, it can't be replayed somewhere else. You actually have to have physical assets to the device, so you can't play it like from across the country border, as an example. So it's super important for us to do that, but it means you trust the device. There's things about it you trust, like TPM or other components that are super critical. And so for us, we're banking on the fact that to do this, we will need to have high integrity devices that from the second they come up, we know they're clean. From post to boot to load time for the OS to load time for applications. And I'm talking about anything, whether it be a phone, whether it be a PC, whether it be an Xbox. We need to make sure that happens. And again, that standard, like UEFI, is one we do share with everybody in the industry, to the gentleman's question, including government, so that we can do it in a way that doesn't have to be just on our hardware or just on our operating systems. Okay, so that's super important. And then protect the supply chain, we'll come up here in just a second, because this is our focus. Where I see things, which is different than your question, which is what's the hardest thing I deal with, these are the trends that are really pushing us hard right now, which is we see the threats coming up the application stack, because OSs continue to get better, and we see them going after the supply chain. Because the supply chain is a great, and if you've read any of the things that come in, supply chain is a very common way, whether it's digital supply chain, physical supply chain. A number of national entities are buying companies in these supply chains, which gives unfettered access to what's in the supply chain. So we have deep concerns around that. The evolving controls, to the comment you just made about to access the cloud from a device. In a world where we no longer, everything lives within a perimeter and you can VPN through one control point, but you're now connecting from any device in any location to any service, not just Microsoft. Could be Amazon, could be Google, could be ServiceNow. I saw them here. I use ServiceNow, a great company. I can't count on the network controls to be as effective as they used to be. I still use them, but I count on identity as the new perimeter for everything we do. And I think about identity as identity of user, identity of device, which is why it has to be secure, identity of app, and identity of data. And that's what will help us in the GDPR thing as well, which is if you can identify the data, you can put the right set of controls around it. But that's a major shift. Which means if I'm doing identity as a perimeter and identity of user and identity of device anywhere, I have to go back to making endpoints work really, really well, which is harder to manage than a controlled environment with network controls, but it's the only path forward. And so we are completely betting on this idea, we call it internet first, where our information workers will no longer connect to the corporate network at all. Even in a building, they'll go internet and come back in. Right, and they'll come back in on a secure device with a multi-factor authentication. Which brings me to the stool. The stool is simple. Protect the pivot. Always protect the pivot. The most important thing you can do is protect the pivot. Protect the pivot means if somebody gets access to anything in your system, they can't pivot and get to anything more interesting. They shouldn't get in at all, but if they do, don't let them go. Reduce the blast radius. Right? So how do you do that? You make sure you have strong authentication so that you can't get past the authentication and you can't replay it from someplace else. That's why having things like bio on a device help us immensely. Having two-factor auth on every single thing you do is super important for us. But it has to be done in a way that's not a lot of friction, right? So the things we do in Hello. The second piece is devices have to be clean and healthy. Devices that are unmanaged are 71% more likely to have malware on them. So how do you manage them in a light way that isn't so IT overhead centric? And so with Intune and with Azure Active Directory join, we're moving to a model where I won't have to have the IT department do it. Microsoft Services will just do it for me. So the way they do mail and SharePoint for me as a service provider, they'll do identity for me as well, and they'll do device management. And so again, that talent can now be used at an amortized rate over a lot of sections as opposed to me having to have all that skill set on my team over time. And so the stool is really simple. Strong auth, device health, and consistent telemetry from all my service providers, both Microsoft and every other service provider are you, because I need the telemetry to let me either predict or respond to incidents that are happening across the entire ecosystem. That last one's the hard one. That's gonna take the most amount of collaboration with everybody to go get there. We can use certain formats, but there's a physics problem we have to go solve. And so those three things make up the stool, which on top of the stool is data protection. And what people don't realize, they're saying, well, why can't I just use regular old username password to get my company data that's not super confidential? Why? Because if there's malware on your machine, they're going to use that to pivot the identity to get to a higher level assurance identity and move across the system. So any one of those stools legs break, the data protection goes away. And so continuing to use that model and metaphor to train our people in understanding this and their roles has been super helpful. Okay, this is boring. This is, the whole talk maybe, but this one in particular. This is about how we do governance. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time, but any big company can't have, I don't believe, has a model where it just has single point of control for everything is right. So for us, we have two groups that run the core stuff for security, and then every business unit, so depending any business you're in, these are our business units or profit centers, they contribute, and we make collective decisions. We make collective decisions on policies, on education awareness, and everything else, but we run locally. You want the person who knows more about Exchange to be executing the local operational security of that thing as close to it as possible, because they'll know abnormality and behavior in the system. And then you want reporting to go again across the company so you can see it all up. So you have this idea of creating policy centrally, executing locally, and then reporting both locally and centrally so you can see across the whole system. And I'll give you a real example of it. Dun, dun, dun. And I'll finish on time. Okay, simple phishing campaign. Bring me back to the story at the beginning. We've all walked through this. Target employee, malware, stand up in an audience, look under your chair, who knows, but it could be one of those things. So you get to the idea of phishing, you get to delivery. Delivery could be either local desk or to a mobile device in this scenario. And then you'll see the employee who called me actually opened the mail. And so now I have exploitation. We have password dumping and hashing. This is where the pivot happens, right? And it could be happening on a mobile section as well. And then from there, they go to take action on the compromised credential, and then, of course, proceed with command and control, or C2 if you're familiar. And then from there, they'll take actions. They'll leak. They'll exfiltrate data, or they'll set something up to come back a year later to do something else in a surreptitious model. And so when I look at this, this will seem like a product pitch. It's not. I'm just telling you how I use this stuff. Let's take a look at the new way we do this today in my environment. So on the phishing side, we've done this wonderful thing called Advanced Threat Protection in Exchange Online Services, which actually is really, really good at detecting 0 days by detonating them when they come before they ever get to your mailbox. They happen at the server edge in the cloud service, which is awesome. So it would block most of those mails. But let's just say it got through. See, it's a boring part of my job. It's still defense in depth. It's the same stuff we always did. But let's just assume it got through. So what happens at this case where you're getting to the exploitation side? Well, if you're running Device Guard, because I trust my device, and since I trust my device and my device prevents anything that's not code signed to run, then even if there was exploitation or malware there, it couldn't do anything. Now, we don't do this on all of our PCs today, but we do it for everyone who touches production systems. They all have Device Guard and Credit Guard, and if it's not signed, it can't run, which is awesome. Expensive, but awesome. And then, of course, let's assume we got past that as well, and it was going to do password hashing or dumping or going about to create the pivot. Well, with the stuff we did in Windows 10 with VSM, the virtual secure mode, these tools like Mimikatz are virtually ineffective at actually working at all on a local host, because we put it in a completely different container, different set of the system. So you can't do that pivot to go dump all the hashes out of there. Pass the hash was one of the, that would have been the question I would have given you 3 years ago. It would have been my answer for the hardest problem to go solve. Next piece, what about if they come in this way? Cool, use conditional access, detect the device. I can't prevent it from running on the mobile platform, but I can detect it's unhealthy, and I can deny access to the services because, again, endpoint is gonna be everything that we manage as we go forward. And then what about command and control? Somehow they bypassed all this amazing stuff. Strong user auth would still prevent you from doing anything. Because even if you got the credentials and you got to that point in the system, because of the fact that we had strong user auth, unless you actually had the device and whatever bio you needed, you still couldn't execute against it like you would have been able to in the past. And then, of course, the Azure Security Center actually detects the server communicating with the command and control environment and can also protect it there. So these are things that are possible. And why I have this idea of hope for the future, which is these technologies plus all the ones I integrate with my partners, give me a defense in depth that I never had before. It just wasn't technically possible before we made these changes in the core OS to make these things happen. And then, of course, doing them at cloud scale, which I couldn't do before. If everyone had to go implement this on every environment, it just operationally wouldn't happen. So that is why and how I'm doing strong authentication, device health, the telemetry in the systems, which you see in the Azure piece there, but it comes across all the systems, to do data protection for the company. So it's just a sharing of what I've learned and how I'm doing it. I didn't mean this to be pitchy. It was super helpful for us to think about it. It's also how we helped educate our users and change our culture in the company. So with that, and this just shows actionable intelligence. The last thing I'm going to say is this running across the whole system. So today, with Windows Advanced Threat Protection, which is, if you don't know what it is, I'm not here to pitch that. My Security Operations Center uses this. They see something that happens on every endpoint. They're replacing a bunch of custom code I wrote. Awesome. I get global perspective. I get insights that we see that we can pick up a needle in a haystack. But if it turns out there's something on there, I can see where it came from. It turned out this particular payload came from Exchange. I can, inside the console, reach out to the Exchange service and talk to their advanced threat protection and find out how many end users actually got this same thing delivered to their mailbox, and I could go take it out of their mailbox before they ever do anything with it. So this integrated accretive value across the services is actually probably more interesting than the line capability, but I didn't show that to you, so I apologize. So it is kind of fun. And so I would say, I still have legacy, and I am doing everything I can to continue to upgrade that and get past that. I think we still have a real problem with people in the supply chain and people going up the app stack. That's a real issue in the present day world we have today. But given some of the stuff that I've shown you and our ability to prioritize risk, and if we work better together, I think we can solve it, so I have hope for the future. So with that, I'd say thank you. I believe I'm out of time. I am out of time, right? And I'll come up and I'll answer questions after, and I'll answer your how we work together if you want to talk to me after, because I said I'd do 3 out of 4, and I did. So thank you very much. Thanks for letting me come.